Welcome to Public Historians at Work, a podcast series from the Center for Public History at the University of Houston. Over the course of the 20th century, Houston evolved into a global city as immigrants from across the world came to call the city home. In this special supplement, undergraduate students from the University of Houston explore Houston's undertold immigrant stories. Together, they reveal a range of experiences that uncover often overlooked textures of the city. In this episode, students recount the lives of Jewish Latin Americans who settled in 1960s and 1970s Houston. These immigrants belonged to two ethnic groups, and while building a life in their new homes, they created a new community of their own. Let's listen in.
I'm Chloe Levy.
And I'm Jenna Goodrich. Chloe, what was your experience growing up Jewish in Houston?
Well, I'm Ashkenazi, and there's a decent-sized community within Houston city limits and the suburbs. It was easy for me to interact and navigate the community here, being Ashkenazi or European Jewish. But I'm also aware that that is not the same story for everyone else.
Houston is very diverse, and I would expect the Jewish community to be very diverse as well.
Exactly. This is what we will be discussing today in this episode. The story you are about to hear comes from an interview with Sarah Esquenazi, a notable Cuban Jewish immigrant who created a home for herself and many others here in Houston. Her interview really influenced the way I think about culture and individualism. Through her, you will begin to understand the salience of race and religion in the 1960s American South. We will discuss the use of traditions to bring a family together and the importance of community when building a life in an incredibly diverse city like Houston.
Sarah's story counters the traditional American dream narrative by offering a new, updated story, one which reveals the complexities of race, religion, and immigration while exemplifying a community-based method of assimilation. The American dream usually evokes individualism, but as we will see, your success can also be measured by your cultural and familial impact.
I was born in Cuba in 1947. My parents were both professional. And we, as far as I can remember in my mind, Cuba was a beautiful island, and my parents took advantage of the island as far as using to do tourism, to go to the beaches. And it was beautiful there.
Before migrating to Houston at 13, Sarah Esquenazi and her family were familiar with assimilation and the blending of cultures. Both her father and her mother's parents had migrated from Turkey and were still adjusting to Cuba.
In our case, the arroz con pollo, which is rice and chicken, we made it the Cuban style. But my mom always, and my mom was a great cook or chef, whatever you want to call it. And she always put spices that resemble a lot of the Middle East, but with the Cuban food. So that was, and like stuffed tomatoes, for example, or stuffed bell peppers, the way she did the meat inside, she put spices that were from the Middle East, but they did that in Cuba too. So without the spices, you know, so that's what the influence.
The Jewish community in Cuba was expansive, especially in Havana, where she lived. Though she didn't live in the Jewish area, her parents made sure that she knew the importance of Sephardic Judaism in her life. Her parents also encouraged Jewish traditions, but with a specific Cuban twist.
We have carnival in Cuba, mm-hmm. like they had in Brazil. You know, it was very popular, mm-hmm. the carnivals. And it was around Purim. Okay. So the carnivals, we would dress, and if the carnival... We dressed for Purim, and if the carnival happened to be going on, then we wore what we wore for Purim. So that was a little bit of influence.
Both of her parents were professionals and were fairly well off. Her mother had a PhD in pharmacy, and her father was a well-known doctor within the Sephardi community. but their wealth and comfort would not last forever. Viva. 1952 to 1959, Cuba was under the control of a military dictatorship headed by Fulgencio Batista. Batista's regime was toppled by guerrilla groups led by Fidel Castro. This event is what came to be known as the Cuban Revolution.
Castro's government was actively spying on Sarah's family. She says that her mother could hear the clicks over the line when she would call others. In order to maintain some level of privacy over the phone, they would speak to each other in Ladino, a language rooted in Old Spanish blended with Turkish and Hebrew elements.
We talk a little bit of Turkish, Ladino, you know, old Spanish, Turkey. And they, when they would talk in Spanish, one or two words, that they would say it was fake in old Ladino that they thought so that. And then they said, my uncle and my aunt said, my brother had a motorcycle accident and he was really critical and they didn't know whether he would make it. And to please ask for permission to come for the week. And by the way, it was December 25th, which was Christmas, the Christmas to New Year's Eve day, that asked for that week to come and see your kids.
Sarah's uncle from Houston came to Cuba and brought her and her brother to America before the island closed. Her parents escaped shortly after with a plan to enter the United States under the pretense they were visiting their injured son. This was a cover, of course, as the parents had made arrangements in Ladino with the American family members.
Right as the parents landed, America cut diplomatic ties with Cuba because Cuba had aligned themselves with the Soviet Union.
But Sarah's experience coming to Houston was not easy. She faced discrimination from the people around her, including her white and Hispanic classmates. Sarah recalls an incident on the school bus that shaped how she perceived her identity.
Actually, I had a cousin who was here, and she didn't, they lived here. I was telling you about my uncle that picked us up. His daughters, one of the daughters did not want her friends to know that she was Latin. And so she didn't want to associate with me. And so whenever we got to the bus, she told me, you have to go to the back of the bus. You know, she didn't want people to know that she was Latin.
Her negative experiences did not end there. Sarah's family were shut out of a local Ashkenazi synagogue due to not being able to pay the fee for attending. There was not an existing Sephardi synagogue for the community, and the local Ashkenazi community did not initially accept the Ashkenazi family. A mitzvah occurred when Beth Israel accepted the Ashkenazi family into their Ashkenazi synagogue.
After Beth Israel opened their doors and their hearts to Sarah and her family, social conditions for them improved tremendously. Sarah Ashkenazi was one of the founding members and even served as secretary of Hebraica Houston, a group that was dedicated to fostering a strong Latin Jewish community and bridging racial gaps in the city of Houston.
The second major event we did was a Latin American night with Jewish food and music. And we got probably about 250 people. And what happened was they became a nucleus. The Mexican people, the Argentinian, the Cuban, the Venezuelan, and each one became, they got together, the Chile, and they that little group got together and they cooked a typical food for their country.
So did Hebraica Houston provide support to Latin Jewish families in the area and give those who did not feel welcome a place to congregate and connect with others of similar backgrounds?
Exactly, Jenna. But Hebraica Houston's influence went beyond just the Latin Jewish immigrants in Houston. It also organized public events like immigration forums and the Hasidic festival that helped educate and garner acceptance for Latin and Jewish people in the Houston area.
In its heyday, Sarah and the rest of Hebraica Houston were extremely active in the Houston area. Despite Hebraica being no longer active, the changes that Sarah and the rest of the group made on an individual and community level are indelible.
What a beautiful story, Jenna.
I agree. What did you take away from it, Chloe?
Well, it seems as if numerous people have forgotten or simply wish to obscure the truth about America. That is, that the United States of America is not a monolith. It is, whether people recognize it or not, a nation of immigrants. What about you, Jenna?
I agree. These kinds of stories highlight the shortcomings of the hyper-individualistic nature of American society, how those values often make the lives of recent U.S. immigrants harder, and most importantly, the role that community plays in the success of any one individual.
I never have thought of myself as an American, but this is my country, and I love the USA, and I forever will be grateful, and I'm a very patriotic person, and I believe in this country. Without this country, our possibilities would have probably been very limited.
This is Chloe
and Jenna
at the University of Houston. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining us for this special episode of Public Historians at Work. You can hear more recorded immigrant stories at the UH Special Collections Houston History Project at libraries.uh.edu. To learn more about the Center for Public History and support student work like this episode, find us at uh.edu/class/CPH or on social media at UHCP History. Remember, we are all keepers of our history.